Hello and welcome to this week's Politically Speaking podcast. I'm your host, as always, Chris McDaniel, a reporter with St. Louis Public Radio. Joining us not in studio, but outside of the Capitol in Jefferson City is...
Jason Rosenbaum of the St. Louis Beacon.
I hope it's not too cold for Jason. And in studio, where it's much warmer.
Yeah, Joe Manis with the St. Louis Beacon.
Well, Jason, you were present yesterday for Governor Jay Nixon's, we can't really call it a press conference because he didn't take any questions, but his press statement, if you will, saying that he's...
Press statement is a far more accurate term than press conference.
And he was reacting to the news that the DOR is getting limited funding. They're getting, you know, full funding for, what is it, 8 months?
Well, a division of DOR is getting funding for 8 months, and there's other reductions as well, but it's the division of motor vehicles.
Well, actually, it's not really funding for 8 months. It's two-thirds of the funding. I mean, you know what I mean? They're saying...
That's what I mean.
The House and Senate are saying, well, it's full funding for for 8 months, and the governor is saying no.
Yeah.
If you guys cut a third from the budget, then it's two-thirds funding for the year.
So in response, he said that layoffs will have to occur as soon as, what is it, was it June or July?
July 1st.
That's when the budget. The first day of the fiscal year. It was kind of an interesting series of events. I got to the Capitol yesterday at about 9:30, 10, not really expecting to be caught in the DOR whirlwind an hour and a half later, but the governor started when he made this press statement about how he didn't like what the conference committee was doing in this instance, and as a response, he was going to lay people off and curtail services. Now, Senate Appropriations Chairman Kurt Schaefer, who kind of encountered a press scrum or barrage or whatever adjective you want to describe a lot of reporters, he says that that's an unnecessary action, that the governor doesn't have to lay people off. And by his logic and his argumentation, they're doing this to exert the Department of Revenue to make changes to how they issue driver's licenses. And they feel that the budget process is the only way to exert that pressure. And if they have made the changes that they want, which include but are not limited to going back to the way that they issued driver's license before, where they issue them on site opposed to the way they are, I guess, now, where they're sending them through the mail, then they'll restore the rest of the funding through a supplemental budget. The governor, as Joe kind of alluded to, is interpreting it differently, that if you're taking out part of the funding, then he has to lay people off and curtail services. So I from what Schaefer said, there's really nothing that he can do to, you know, force the governor to do one thing or the other. This is kind of within the purview of his administration on how to deal with things like that. I mean, the legislature appropriates and the executive executes, essentially. But it's just kind of another wrinkle in this festering saga about the Department of Revenue and this driver's license situation, which seems to have enveloped the Capitol in recent months.
Is there any indication of how many employees we're talking about would have to be laid off?
No, I mean, this was one of the problems of the governor not taking questions.
Right.
I mean, we didn't get any other information beyond his statement. And we didn't get the follow-ups of how expansive these would be and what they would affect. And I think that's kind of why a lot of reporters were perturbed about it. And frankly, Kurt Schaefer was perturbed at reporters for coming to him and asking him questions and not really getting responses from the governor about his announcement. And, you know, that was kind of the other, I guess, wrinkle in the situation, the lack of questions from the governor. But, I mean, that's more of an inside baseball press sort of thing. But it does have some logistical consequences when you take that route, because we can't really get much more information beyond what he said in his statement.
Well, you can get it. I mean, we can get it from the Department of Revenue. They can at least give us how many employees are in the DMV. Now, a couple things. Because I was there in Jeff City last week when Schaefer had his marathon five-hour hearing a week ago, and where a lot of this then came out. Because originally, this fight was all about the scanning of the concealed carry permits and the storing of those documents in an electronic database when people went in to get it put on as an endorsement on their driver's license, so that when they only have to show one thing when they have to show they have a concealed carry permit. Well, and of course this touched off a firestorm. Well, then Schaefer, who's head of the Probst committee, also points out that they're also scanning these other personal documents like birth certificates and marriage licenses when you go in. Now, Schaefer was contending that they just recently started scanning, which is true, just since last fall. But however, those documents have been mandated going back. I mean, the Republican-controlled legislature under Matt Blunt was the one that imposed the requirement that you had to show all those documents in order to get a driver's license. This was all about kind of a precursor to photo ID, you know, requiring all this stuff. Now, it also, though, is in line with the federal Real ID mandates because they're trying to prevent fraud in the issuance of driver's licenses. And the Nixon administration has contended that's one of the reasons that it became centralized. And it ended up with this firm in Georgia because they put up the lowest bid. I mean, and they were explaining it to Schaefer last week because he was like, why isn't it done in Missouri? And they were like, well, by the law, you say we have to take the lowest bid. And this Georgia firm, which does some other states, gave us the lowest bid. So the driver's licenses now are mailed out of Georgia. Now, there's this other backdrop. While Jason and others were at covering the governor and Schaefer, the House was dealing with a bill to increase the fees for various services that the fee offices, which are these 180 quasi-public, quasi-public private offices that are run by generally politically connected people, but they actually issue. Until last year, they actually issued the driver's licenses. They're still the place where you go to apply. They also do titles, vehicle titles, that sort of thing. They want to have their fees increased because in rural Missouri especially, they're saying that a lot of these offices are running at so much of a loss that they're in danger of going out of business. So, and part of it's because driver's licenses, since for almost 10 years now, have only been once every 10 years. It used to be once every 4 years you had to get them renewed, not once every 10 years, which again was something that the Republicans did. And this is the kind of unexpected consequences where now the fee offices in rural Missouri are having trouble because they don't have enough foot traffic. So that plus these cuts, while technically the cuts are going to affect some people in Jeff City, it is going to affect the fee offices as well. And it could be that, frankly, I mean, the DOR might start going around closing some of these fee offices. And which ones are going to get hit? Rural Missouri. So I think there's a backdrop here. And I think that maybe if the governor had taken questions yesterday, he could have gotten into some of that, and he didn't. And so...
Yeah.
Has there been any explanation there as to why he decided not to take questions? Was it?
No, not really. I mean, I think that some members of the press corps were understandably perturbed about that because as I'm sure many listeners know, I used to cover Jefferson City for the Columbia Daily Tribune, and gubernatorial press briefings, you know, were important to reporters not only so we could get more information about what they were announcing, but it gives the press access to the governor about things that they need to ask him. Now, to be fair to Nixon, Nixon said at the beginning that he would take questions during his availability after they passed the budget, which I guess will either be today or tomorrow. So we may get more insight about that then. But still, when we're writing these stories after the fact, and we don't really have a lot of follow-up or explanation, those questions kind of linger on temporarily. I would imagine when he has his press availability and when the focus will be on the budget, he will go more into depth on this, and we will probably learn more about how these cuts will impact everyday people and the people that work for this division.
Yeah, because one of the things you need to make clear, Missouri has line item veto. The governor cannot add to the budget, but he can take out. So, I mean, forgetting if the legislature doesn't put in money in DMV, he can't put money back in, and he also can't shift money within the Department of, DOR, because if they specify that only X amount is supposed to be spent in DMV, it's kind of like the sequester on a national, but on the other hand, he could cut out something else. And I still wonder if that building that the legislators want to buy next door and convert, which is now part of the capital improvements, you just kind of wonder if that's not a little target for the governor if he gets really ticked off over what happens with DMV. I'm not basing this on anything, but it's just, you just kind of wonder. I mean, he does have a temper. He's known to have a temper. So are some of the legislative leaders. Yeah. Jones is known for have a temper. This could get fascinating if, and I wondered if that wasn't why he wasn't taking questions yesterday.
Maybe he just wanted to put it out there and not get riled up about it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just speculating. I have no, this is not based on anything, but as one who's felt the brunt of it occasionally over the years, I can tell you he does
and
have a temper.
I just want to point out, I would say generally, whenever I've gone to a news conference, either in St. Louis or in Jefferson City, though not exclusively, there have been times where it hasn't happened, the governor usually does take questions.
Yes.
And you usually can ask him about things that are not on the exact topic of what he's talking about.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I don't want to paint this picture that the governor doesn't answer or invite questions from the press.
That's why.
Just in this instance, since he didn't, which is why I think people are noticing it a little bit.
Exactly.
That's kind of my point.
Very good point, because frankly, when he's in St. Louis, I mean, I've had Capitol reporters complain because if he's in St. Louis and you show up at one of his press events,
like a
Medicare, he'll talk about whatever. If you ask him, he often wants you to ask on topic first.
Yeah.
But then after that, he'll take questions on almost everything, depending on how much time he has. And especially if they know ahead of time, because they usually ask if you're going to be there. And I'll usually, send a note back saying, yeah, I'm going to ask questions about such and such, just in general.
This is standard fare. I didn't know this, politically speaking, would be talking about the regulations for the press to ask people questions. But, I mean, most people will do that. I mean, I remember I put out a tweet a couple weeks ago about how it was the first time I remember that Charlie Dooley was sitting down during a press availability. And somebody on Twitter misconstrued that. It's like, he has press availabilities all the time. I mean, you talked with him in October, and I was like, no. It's not his first time he's done a press availability. It's the first time he is literally sitting down during a press availability and getting comfortable while we're talking with him.
We
talk with him all the time, and we throw sometimes critical and tough questions at people like him and other people. And most of the time, maybe the answer isn't sufficient to the people who are reading it, but it is kind of part of the job of being a political official that there are regular times when the press gets to ask people questions. And, the people that have been around for a while, they know how to deal with it. And, Nixon has been around for a while, and I wanted to make that point because I didn't want to give the perception that he doesn't talk with people.
Well, and I think that's a really good point because I don't know how it is in other states, but, no, Nixon has been very good about taking questions. His predecessor, Matt Blunt, was also good at that. Now, that got Matt Blunt in trouble periodically, but on some of the stuff he would say. But he's very witty, like his dad, Senator Roy Blunt, who also tends to take questions. And,
I once asked Matt Blunt whether a phrase during his speech about how he was not going to run for re-election was an allusion to a Simpsons quote, and he answered that. So if he can take silliness like that from a stupid reporter like me, you know, that's kind of a sign that, yeah, he does have a sense of humor, and he is willing to, you know, take the brunt of sometimes odd questions.
And Mel Carnahan and John Ashcroft were kind of the same mode in that if you were at their news conference, they would usually talk to you afterwards.
Well, getting back a little bit on track here, tomorrow, hopefully, you will at least be able to ask Governor Nixon whether or not he plans to veto some of this tax cut legislation that has been going through. What's the feeling out there in Jefferson City?
Well, I mean, the Democrats who are opposed to it certainly hope that he vetoes it. And that would set up, I think, a really substantial and substantive fight during veto session. Mm-hmm. This bill, which Joe has written about extensively and which I kind of got up to speed on yesterday, is kind of a wide-ranging tax cut bill. It cuts personal income taxes, business income deductions, it raises those, and it also cuts corporate income taxes. Now, it's different from previous bills because the previous bills raised sales taxes, which drew the ire of Nixon and a lot of other people. And this bill also gradually phases in a lot of these tax cuts. And there are also triggers available that if general revenue is not growing at a fast enough clip, that some of the tax cuts are delayed. There, the people who support this bill, like Will Krause of Lee's Summit or Eric Schmidt of Glendale, they're saying this is a more responsible approach to what than what Kansas did, where they cut taxes very rapidly and much less methodically are phasing in. But Democrats say, you know, this is going to cost the state hundreds of millions of dollars when they're fully phased in. The state has been cutting taxes for the last 5, 6, 7 years or more. And, you know, economic growth hasn't necessarily been gangbusters when you look at statistics. And they really are hoping the governor vetoes this, and it forces them to bring it up in a veto override session and kind of see if there's enough override votes. That's going to happen with a lot of bills.
It's going to be pretty close in terms of if they have enough votes to override this.
Because in the Senate, there was a veto-proof majority that approved it. Now, approving a bill and voting to override are two different things. And I've seen over the years where, okay, the Senate had the 20, they need 23 votes. They got 24 yesterday. Sometimes you have one or two that peel off, depending on the situation. Now, the challenge facing the governor is that there are veto-proof majorities of Republicans in both chambers. So if they all stick together on something, he's pretty much can be overruled. It's just they often don't. And the key is going to be the vote in the House. If the expected vote is what, today or, I mean, this week.
It's supposed to be either today or tomorrow.
And if the House doesn't get the 109 votes, the governor may be tempted. If it's 109 votes, I think he'll think about it. But there also may be some behind-the-scenes negotiations. Now, in line item vetoes, he can't, like, line item veto a tax bill. I mean, he's, you know, it's either the whole thing or nothing.
The other thing to consider is whether Republicans even bring this up for an override. And I think that's going to be a question of a lot of bills that get vetoed or that are expected to be vetoed in the next few months. I think with this bill in particular, they will bring it up for an override because it is a major priority in both chambers of the General Assembly. For some other bills that may have veto-proof majorities, but are maybe smaller bills, are bills that are just not as far-reaching or not seen as a big agenda, they may not use the political capital or provide more attention to some of those things. But for this bill in particular, I think that they would try to put it up for an override, and I think there will be a pretty substantial battle in September, which means maybe Joe and I both have to come up here instead of just one of us.
Yeah, so. Sometimes we've had to do that. I think it's going to be fascinating because the budget has to be finished by December 10th, which is Friday, and it has to be to the governor by then. Yep. And so that will kind of set the stage, I think, for the final week of the General Assembly and how things goes. So the tax stuff, actually, they've got next week they can deal with. It's the DOR and the budget stuff that's got to be done by Friday. By Friday. So that's going to be key in whether or not there's been any behind-the-scenes hashing out of some of the discord, because I think there is a link a little bit. I mean, just and so it'll be fascinating. Now, one other thing that happened, just wanted to mention in passing, is that the whole thing about the liquor wars that I mentioned last week, the fight between the liquor distributor, the two biggest liquor distributors in the state over a court change in the definition of franchise, got its first test this week. And Major Brands, which is based in St. Louis, won that first round. The House overwhelmingly approved a bill that basically puts the definition of franchise the way it was before. I mean, without boring listeners with a lot of technical detail, the reason everyone's paying attention to this is because the distributors have hired every lobbyist in general. Yeah.
There are so many. I cannot tell you how many lobbyists I've seen, and there were literally, I think, just a bunch of Glazers people hanging out near the Senate. I mean, I'm talking, when I say a bunch, I don't know if they were all lobbyists or employees, but I think it was just a mob of people. It's just nuts.
Yeah, because I had mentioned in my story that reporters, since I'm not in Jeff City, that reporters who were there were remarking that the galleries were packed for the House vote, and then as soon as the vote, they emptied out, so they knew it was for the liquor bill. Well, so I made some reference to lobbyists. Well, then somebody tweeted to me that actually this was somebody in the Major Brand camp who said, no, they weren't all lobbyists. Some of them were lobbyists, but some of them were employees. So apparently Major Brand sent a bunch of employees down there, and it sounds like Glazers did the same. So that there was a bunch of employees who were down there for the vote as well. So sounds like they also have employees now collaring their favorite legislator to on this.
Lobbying their favorite legislator.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they are spending so much money. And as I wrote last week, no lobbyist wants to say on the record, but off the record, they were all saying how they're all making a ton of money off of this, that the distributors were just, you know, there are a lot of money to be made in the alcohol industry, and a lot of it's being spent this week to help a lot of lobbyists' bottom line.
You could say that this issue is bubbling over tons of cash for people.
Jason, I've got some bad news.
What?
When you come back, there might be some. You might not want to stop for fast food because there have been some protests around here. Joe, you were out at. Where were you? Were you at Jimmy John's?
I was at Ferguson. I was at the Ferguson one.
Okay.
In McDonald's. The Jimmy John's was yesterday morning. It started at 11. It said Jimmy John's in South St. Louis. This is fascinating because the organizers were telling me that actually Jimmy John's was kind of a wildcat. You know, they were all supposed to start yesterday afternoon.
They jumped the gun.
They jumped the gun. So some employees there, one of the workers told me later that it was four of the workers did join the protest outside. Mm-hmm. They're protesting the minimum wage, which in Missouri is $7.35. Missouri's minimum wage right now is, because of what we passed in 2006, is actually a dime more than the
federal minimum wage.
Federal minimum wage is $7.25. So, but they're protesting that they would like to see it closer to $15. Now, this is actually part of a national movement. There's already been fast food protests in Chicago and New York. There was a Ferguson McDonald's Wednesday evening where there was also a rally and some of their workers were outside. And then today, Thursday, there were supposed to be estimates varied. The list I got showed at least six other fast food places.
Mm-hmm.
Organizers are saying it could be up to 30. They're being careful how much they say. And it's not all the workers. It's just the workers who agree to participate. They're estimating about 100 altogether. But it's very limited. They're supposed to finish by Thursday night. Then they go back on the job. Now, there's union representatives who've been showing up at these restaurants to hand out flyers to the management telling them that federal law protects these workers from leaving their post for one day. Now, there may be some, I mean, I'm not getting into the legal fight, but I'm just saying that some management may challenge that. But really, the backdrop of this is that this is arguably the first shot in what could be a national long-range effort to organize the fast food industry, which is workers, into unions. And there are several unions that are vying to represent them, and in part to improve working conditions and in part to increase labor clout. I mean, there's two ways of looking at this. So
who organized this, Joe?
Well, there were some people I talked to yesterday. There was at least one organizer from Chicago who had come down. Mm-hmm. There was a couple union people from actually the transit workers who were over from Kansas City. They do have some support from the labor movement here in Missouri. They do. Mm-hmm. And so there were some labor reps from here, although a lot of labor reps are also in the Capitol. There's also some clergy who are supporting this. Jobs with Justice, which is a community organizing group in the St. Louis area, they're participating in this. And in fact, they are doing a rally later today in U City in support of the fast food workers. So it's a lot of different groups that are involved. But this is really an offshoot of what happened in Chicago and New York earlier.
You can follow me on Twitter at @CSMcDaniel. You can follow Jason on Twitter at
Jay Rosenbaum.
And you can follow Joe on Twitter at
Jay Mannies. That's JMANNIES.
And Jason had a couple of stories that we talked about today. You can read those at stlbeacon.org. There are even a few videos in there.
Yes.
That I watched of Nixon and Schaefer. Schaefer's was pretty interesting.
I felt the need to include his pre-interview part.
That's what I found to be most interesting.
When you watch the Nixon one all the way through and he's not answering questions, it kind of goes together pretty well. I will just say, as a personal aside, since I love using these podcasts to talk about me, I am very happy with the fact that my new MacBook Pro has iMovie, because it is so much better than Windows Movie Maker that I've been telling random people how great it is, and I doubt that they care, even though I care a lot about this. And
I'm sure our listeners care so much, too.
I know. And I know iMovie and Windows Movie Maker are very basic editing tools, but for someone like me who has to make stuff really quickly like that, thank you, Steve Jobs. You're in my desk.
Well, that should just about do it for the Politically Speaking podcast brought to you by Apple. We'll be back next week. Until then, so long.
So long.
Apple.